So over the last, well, over the last year, we've been talking about what it means to be a thankful witness. So the series has been how to share the good news with confidence and with love. And so we've been looking at, look, what does it mean to be a witness? And to be a witness is someone who has been given a message, someone who has seen something that's truthful or something that is real, and that they're bold enough to speak about that thing. And we've also talked about what it means to be thankful. So what does it mean to be motivated not by fear or obligation, not to share God's message because we have to, but because we want to, because we're motivated by his grace and his love and his goodness, that we're a thankful people that speak because it flows out of the goodness of what God's done in our life. So that's why we've called it Thankful Witness. Lost it again. And it came really out of many months of prayer as a community and as a leadership team, where we really felt God saying that we've been great at connecting with people, we've been great at loving people and sharing our life and demonstrating the acts of Jesus, but we've struggled to share the message of Jesus, and we've struggled with evangelism. And so that's why we've been exploring that topic for the last season. So today I'm going to continue that theme, and we're going to talk about the gospel being trustworthy. And so I've titled it, The Gospel is Trustworthy, because God is trustworthy. I'm going to explore what it means to speak the gospel and to let Jesus be Lord over our words. And I'm going to talk about what it means to put our trust in the one who acts behind our words, who actually makes the gospel powerful, the one who gives us authority, the one who puts meaning behind our words. So, look, you've probably heard it said that we have two ears and one mouth, so we can listen twice as much as we speak. And this was said by Epictetus, I knew I'd say that wrong, philosopher in ancient Greek times. And it's a great little kind of vignette. I love to talk. Personally, I find talking easy. I find listening pretty difficult. And I think many of us find it that way. And so it makes sense that if we have two ears, if we can listen twice as much as we speak, then we'll be learners. You know, I must admit, I look at his face, I think he's probably a bit smug saying this. Yeah, but James from the scriptures also basically said the same thing. He said that everyone should be quick to listen and slow to speak. So I figured if they both said it, then it must be true. But there are other sayings that are kind of, you know, against people like me who just love to talk lots, make me feel bad. So here's another one. Actions speak louder than words. It's another really common saying. This one was first said, apparently, by Abraham Lincoln. I have it on good authority that that's true from Google. I agree with the sentiment of this statement that, you know, we can speak, but if our actions, if our lives don't match what we say, then we're hypocritical, and our words actually are pretty meaningless. But what's been interesting is that we've been exploring what it means to use words. So listening is important and action is important, but words are actually also really important. And so we've been exploring what it means to speak and to share the idea that actually words are important, that words matter, and actually sometimes it can be really hard to speak. You know, I've been thinking it's hard to speak up against injustice when there's a danger for you speaking, isn't there? And it's hard for you to have an opinion, let's say in a workplace, about politics or religion or just life, when everyone in your workplace thinks the opposite. To actually be the one who says what you think is actually really difficult. So sometimes words are actually hard. It's hard to speak with honesty and integrity and vulnerability when it's difficult to do so. And it's hard to speak a message of truth in a world nowadays that no longer believes in truth, doesn't believe in morality. It's hard to be the one who has a message, the message of Jesus. And so it takes great boldness to speak. And so as I was preparing and thinking about, you know, actions and words and all that kind of stuff, I was reflecting on a movie that I saw a number of years ago. You've probably seen it. It's The King's Speech. And it's actually about what it means to struggle with words. It's based on the real life of King George VI, so the king before Queen Elizabeth's reign, and he was played by Colin Firth in this movie. And he reluctantly became the King of England when his brother abdicated from the throne. Now, it was a really difficult time in English history and the history of the world. It was between World War I and World War II, but Hitler was rising and the world was in turmoil. There was struggle and upheaval, and people were looking to their leaders to lead. And very soon after he became king, Hitler invaded France, and England was forced to declare war on Germany, and World War II began. So it's a difficult time in history to be a leader. It was also a time of technical change and technology change, where for the first time really in history, kings couldn't just sit on in their palaces and do their own thing, because they were forced to actually communicate and be accountable to their people because of mass communication. So radio was in every household, and people would sit around the radio before the TV was really there, and kings were expected now to use their voice to lead with words, and that was really new. And so the challenge for King George VI is that he was a man of action, but he wasn't a man of words. He struggled with words. He had a stammer and he was a terrible communicator. He was fearful of speaking in public and he just didn't know what to say, which made him weak in the eyes of the people, and they were looking for a good, strong king. And it came down to words. So I've got a short clip that I'm going to play. Who's seen this movie? A number of people. Good. Okay, great. So it won't be completely unfamiliar. But this is his first, this is his inaugural speech.
His first broadcast. And today, his younger brother,
His Royal Highness the Duke of York, will give his inaugural broadcast to the nation and the world.
The king.
Oh, it's pretty painful to watch, isn't it, if you think about it? Just can't imagine standing in front of anyone, but let alone knowing you're the new king for the world and humiliating yourself with words and stammering. So look, I watched that and I reflected on it again about words and the power of words. And look, it takes great boldness and it takes great courage to speak a message when you're terrified. It takes a lot of courage to speak when you're fearful or when you're not sure if the words will come out. And we may not have a stammer, but for many of us, we feel inadequate and afraid when it comes to sharing the gospel and sharing our faith with others. And so this is really what it means to be a thankful witness, to have trust in God and to somehow find the courage to use words and to know that something is going to happen. So I want to answer a few questions tonight. I want to look at how do we speak the gospel with courage and integrity when we feel, or if we feel inadequate or fearful, and how do we overcome barriers and struggles and allow Jesus to be Lord of our mouths and our words. And at the end of this talk, I'd like to ask anyone who feels like they want to respond to be able to say yes with our mouths, to continue taking up that challenge to walk towards sharing our faith and working out what it means to speak with confidence and love in a world which struggles to sometimes hear a message. So I was reflecting at on the scriptures and where do we find people who stammered? Where do we find people who struggle to speak? And the reality is it's amazing when I had a quick think about it. There are many, many prophets and heroes in the scriptures who God gave a message to speak and they really, really struggled to speak it. And they're our heroes, and yet something happened and allowed them to overcome these fears. So there was Jonah. He was asked to speak a message to the people of Nineveh. And in my kid's Bible, instead of going to Nineveh, he went to not Nineveh. So I thought that was great. Jeremiah, so he was another great prophet. And he spoke the words of God, and God gave him a message to speak. And at the very beginning of the book of Jeremiah, Jeremiah argues with God and says, I do not know how to speak, I'm only a child. Again, it was a really fearful thing to speak God's message. Not just the blokes, the women struggled. So Esther, she refused to speak a message to the king. She was called by God to say a message that would rescue the people of Israel from annihilation, from being executed and slaughtered. And she refused, but Mordecai said to her, if you remain silent at this time, then relief and deliverance for the Jews will come from another place, but you and your family will perish. So there's a sense where, well, God will rescue his people one way or the other, but he's called you to speak, so just do it. And she did. And so did Jonah, so did Jeremiah, so did Ezekiel, so did the prophets who were fearful. So that's encouraging to me. So even the heroes of our faith had challenges to overcome when it came to speaking words. But when I think about the hero or the one that stood out most to me in the scriptures, it's Moses. You know, Moses, the man who actually was the great prophet, the one who led the people out of Israel, who took on Pharaoh and actually took Israel to a new promised land. Well, his beginning story is really interesting. He had a stammer, just like King George VI, or at least he was fearful of using words. And he struggled. And so what we find in the book of Exodus is his dialogue with God and his wrestle with God about the call to speak. And what we also find is how he overcame that wrestle. And that's where we can overcome the challenges too. So again, the burning bush. So we're now in the desert. And Moses is, he fled Egypt and he's been 40 years in the desert. He got married, he had kids, he raised a family, he was a shepherd, a nomad. He lived away from everyone else and he had a very quiet life. And he must have thought, well, that's my life and that's the way it will be. And then suddenly he sees this bush that's on fire and it's not being consumed and it's in the desert, and he was drawn towards it, and God gave him a message and a calling to go and speak a message to the king of Pharaoh, the most powerful man in all of the known world, and to say, let the slaves go free. It was a pretty challenging call, so no wonder he was a bit fearful. And this is, we're going to read about this story. I'm going to skip through parts of it because it's a long story and I want to get to kind of the argument bits because we all love Moses arguing with God. But let's have a read. So now Moses was tending the flock of Jethro, his father-in-law, the priest of Midian, and he led the flock to the far side of the wilderness and came to Horeb, the mountain of God. There the angels of the Lord appeared to him in flames of fire from within a bush. Moses saw that though the bush was on fire, it did not burn up. So Moses thought, I will go over and see this strange sight, why the bush does not burn up. When the Lord saw that he had gone over to look, God called him from within the bush and said, Moses, Moses. And Moses said, here I am. Now I love this story, and it's a story where Moses sees this bush and there's this attraction towards God, and he realizes that there's something holy or something beautiful or something amazing with God. And he's drawn to the bush, but at the same time, God is holy and bigger than him, and there's this kind of awe-inspiring exchange. And so a word that I heard recently is called a numinous experience, which means we're attracted to God and we're drawn away at the same time. And that's our experience of God. We're kind of called to go in and then we're fearful and want to run away. And there's this kind of play that happens when we encounter God. And it's a beautiful thing, but it's a terrifying thing sometimes. He calls us close, he pushes us away, he invites us, he challenges us. And that's our relationship with the living God. So you're seeing that here, But Moses responds and he says, despite this play, here I am. Yes, Lord, here I am. So he comes to God. And then we continue in Exodus 3, verse 7, and then 10 to 11. I've missed a few bits just to keep going. The Lord said, I have indeed seen the misery of my people in Egypt. I've heard them crying out because of their slave drivers and am concerned about their suffering. So now go, I am sending you to Pharaoh to bring my people, the Israelites, out of Egypt. But Moses, the great man of God, the bold and brave prophet, said, who am I should go that I should go to Pharaoh and bring the Israelites out of Egypt? So, I mean, essentially, God calls Moses and says, I will carry you with a great hand. I will send you to Pharaoh. I have a message. I'm God. He's speaking out of a burning bush, and there's an audible voice. It's pretty amazing, right? And Moses' response is, who am I? I'm no one. Don't choose me. I'm not the person that you should choose. You got it wrong, God. I'm just a lowly shepherd. You must be joking. And we read these words, but you can see this wrestle that Moses has. He doesn't want to be chosen, and it's actually the fear of speaking. We continue. And God says, I will be with you, and this will be the sign to you that it is I who have sent you. When you have brought the people out of Egypt, you will worship God on this mountain. So I used to read this and think, oh, good, God gave Moses a sign. Moses said, no, who am I? I couldn't possibly do it. So God gives Moses a sign that it will be okay. But the sign is that you go and speak to the Pharaoh, and once you he lets the people go and you walk out of Egypt as free people, the sign is, I'll talk to you again back here. What type of sign is that? It's a sign that happens after the event. it's not very encouraging. It's kind of like someone who says, I'm terrified of my university exams. I'm so stressed. They're coming up. And God says, there will be a sign. The sign that you will get through your exams and succeed is that after you finish your exams, you'll get a certificate. And that's the sign. it's not very helpful. but God's what God's doing here, I think, is he saying to Moses, I'll give you a sign. I'm God. I'm not going to make it okay. I actually need faith. I need you to trust in me. The sign is relationship and trust. It's actually not something that I'll give you before you step out. And then you see this happening again and again as he keeps going. So the sign is to trust in him and to have a relationship with God. So then he continues. Moses said, suppose I go to the Israelites and say to them, the God of your fathers has sent me to you. And they ask me, what is his name? Then what shall I tell them? So Moses is really trying to find ways to kind of get out of this difficult situation. And God said to Moses, I am who I am. This is what you are to say to the Israelites. I am has sent you. Now, I am is not an answer to the question, what is your name? I mean, we know that the best kind of translation of the Hebrew is Yahweh, which you probably have heard of as a name of God. It's the unspoken name. It means I am who I am, or I choose to be who I choose to be. God is basically saying the same thing to Moses. I'm not going to give you an answer. I'm mysterious. I am who I am. Trust in me. I've given you a calling. Speak, and then things will happen. So it's that same idea that Moses isn't getting the answers that he wants before he speaks. God is just saying, I've called you, go, and as you do so, I am with you. But it's a very different type of comfort than here's a guarantee. Now, if we keep going, there are kind of, God does give him a sign of, he calls him to pick up a snake and it becomes a staff, and he puts his hand in his pocket and it becomes leprous, and he puts it back in and it comes out again. And the funny thing is that Moses seemed okay about that, but he was more terrified of the neck. He was still scared of speaking. And then Moses says to God, suppose I go to the Israelites and say to them, the God of your fathers has sent me to you, and they ask me, what is... Oh, have I done this? Apologize. Moses answered, what if they do not believe me or listen to me and say, the Lord did not appear to you? So when I read that, I just think Moses basically says, what if they say, you're just making this up? Now, how often do we feel the same way? We're going to go and tell people about the God that we've met, who speaks to us and heals us and changes us. What if they say, you're just making it up? Like, it's just your opinion, it's just your idea. Moses had exactly the same struggles. What if I go to Pharaoh and they say, did the Lord really appear to you? You're essentially making stuff up. And so again, there's this kind of wrestle that Moses has. And then he continues. This is the last bit we'll look at. So this is from Exodus 4, 10 to 13 now. Moses said to the Lord, pardon your servant, Lord. I have never been eloquent, neither in the past nor since you have spoken to your servant. I'm slow in speech and tongue. Basically, I don't speak good. The Lord said to him, that's the translation of Daniel. So, who gave humans their mouths? Who made them deaf or mute? Who gives them sight or makes them blind? Is it not I, the Lord? Now go, I will help you speak and will teach you what to say. So again, it's the same wrestle. You've got Moses saying, I don't have skills. I can't speak. Who am I? What if they don't believe me? Objection after objection after objection. And God is saying, there's a sign that will happen once you speak. I am who I am. I'll follow you. And then not only that, well, I gave you your mouth. I gave you words. It's not your words. It's not your skills that's actually going to allow Pharaoh to let the people go. The living God is behind your words. The living God, I will speak. I will act. I will do signs and wonders behind the words that you speak. It's not about you, Moses. It's about me. Trust in me. Again, then Moses said, pardon your servant, could you send someone else? So it just goes on and on. And then God is gracious enough to send Aaron and for Moses to put words in Aaron's mouth because Aaron is a little bit better at speaking. But something happened between this exchange and the end of the story where Moses is an orator. He is a great leader. He confidently does the things of God and he speaks and leads people out of Israel. He brings people the law. Moses actually learned to speak and he actually learned to obey God with his mouth, but that's not how he started. And I think that's where we go back to the burning bush, that what we see is a wrestle between Moses, who was fearful of speaking God's message, and we have God, who is basically saying, trust in me, I'm calling you to speak, and when you speak, stuff will happen, but not until after you've spoken. Moses says, I can't do it, because Moses is looking at himself and God is saying, look at me. And Moses is looking at Pharaoh and all the army and all the Egyptian and all the culture and saying, well, they will reject me, because he's looking at himself and he's looking at the people that he's speaking to. But instead of looking at the messenger, God's saying, look at the one who gave you the message. And when you look at God, the message works. Do you know what I mean? It's really different. And so I think the difference is that Moses actually spoke. He actually went forward. And as he did so, God took the water and turned it into blood. And then there was a bit more confidence. And he spoke again. And then God sent plagues. And he spoke again. And just miracle after miracle occurred after he took the step of walking into his calling until he trusted in God and he built a relationship with I Am. It's quite miraculous. So, look, these are the excuses I saw from Moses. I'm not worthy. No one will listen to me. They will think I'm making it up. I'm not eloquent, but I can't do it alone. And thank God that Moses actually met God on the road as he walked into his calling. And I think we have the same objections. I mean, I don't know if these are your objections. These are some of my objections when it comes to stepping out and sharing my faith with others. But what if they don't want to talk about religion? But what if they've been hurt by the church? What if they make fun of me? What if they reject the message? What if I upset them and come across as judgmental? What if they ask me a question I can't answer? What if I do damage to our friendship? And we might turn the questions a bit for our culture, but they're kind of the same questions because they're the questions that we ask when we're looking at ourselves and our skills and what we can and can't do. And they're the questions that we ask when we're looking at others that we're thinking of having a conversation with. But when we look at God and we realize actually God is going to be behind our message and God is acting and God is preparing the way and God is there doing miracles, then we actually can trust in God. And so look, this is why I called this sermon The Gospel is Trustworthy, because God is trustworthy. And what I've realized in my life is when I struggle to trust God with using my mouth, actually it's because I'm struggling to trust in the one who's calling me to speak. But I can trust the gospel not because my words are amazing and not because I have some fantastic way of sharing stuff. I can trust the gospel because God's behind it and he's acting and he's using me, and so I can trust in him. Does that make sense? It's actually not about me. And never has been. But he does want to use me, just like he wanted to use Moses, just like he used his prophets. And the very act of speaking changes us. God brings himself into our lives as we take that step of faith. The sign that God is real comes after we speak. And it's amazing. And I've certainly seen this more and more and more. It's what I've been taught. So as I reflect on this idea that the gospel is trustworthy, I suppose I was trying to think, what's my barrier? You know, what, if I'm really honest with you, what do I really struggle with at this point in time? It's not that I don't have words. I feel like I have words now. But I think there's something about the confidence I have in God, if I'm really honest. And that's why I wanted to speak this message. So I think I know that the gospel is trustworthy for my life. I've been healed by Jesus. I've heard prophecies and had dreams that have come true in miraculous ways. I've had my life changed. I've been transformed inside out. I've just seen God at work in my life and changed me and healed me and brought me hope. And I've seen it in the lives of you. Many of us have had God rescue us at the surprise, in the most surprising times when we wouldn't have survived otherwise. Like, the gospel is trustworthy. I've got no doubt about that for my life and for your life. I've seen it. But now, this is ridiculous. This is my confession. You know, as a pastor, I should have complete confidence in the gospel. But if I'm really honest, when I think about the gospel for my friends' lives, or the gospel for my culture's life, or the gospel for people who don't yet know Jesus, I'm actually not that confident they'll respond. In fact, if I think about speaking and when I have spoken, if I'm really honest, I kind of feel like I expect people not to respond, which is actually really strange if I think about it. It sounds pretty silly. You know, I've experienced God transform my life. I know the gospel is true. The scriptures say it's true. We've experienced it be true. Billions of people from all cultures of all times have been transformed by the same message. And yet I still expect that all of my friends will see it to be foolishness and not wisdom. It just doesn't match up. But if I'm honest, that's the barrier I have. And when I wrestle with that, I realize actually my barrier, it actually isn't about the gospel. It's actually about how much do I trust God to do what he says he'll do in the world around me. Because if I really trusted God, the one who calls me to speak the message and the one who promises that he'll prepare the way before me, then I'm going to be okay. And I'm just like Moses. Does that make sense? Does anyone wrestle with similar stuff, like the idea that the gospel's true for me, but it's hard to believe that it's true for you? It's really silly when you say it like that. Well, it seems silly when I say it like that, but the reality is he did rise from the dead, and if he did it for me, and he did it for you, and he did it for billions of people, then he's still doing it today, because he's the living God. He died, he rose again, he sent his spirit into the world to prepare the way, and so the message works, because God's behind the message. We can trust in him. And so that's, I suppose, I've been thinking through that a lot. And as I read the story of Moses, I realize that actually I can put my trust in Jesus. And the more I speak, the more I'm seeing God at work, and then the more confidence I'm actually having in God to work through my words, because it's not about my words, it's about who he is. So my last point is that this is what I'm experiencing, that, and I think I see this in Moses' life, that as we talk, we learn to trust. You speak and you, wow, something actually happens. And even if it doesn't happen the way you expect it to happen, actually something still happens. and then as we talk, we trust. And then as we trust, we talk. And there's this interrelationship. As we trust God more, then we testify to the message. As we testify more, then we actually learn to trust. And it just goes back and forth. So if we're scared and unprepared, if we feel like we can't do it, then that's just where God wants us to be. Just like Moses, just like Jonah, just like Esther, it means that we actually have to trust God with our words and to trust that he'll show up on the other side of letting them go. Bleh. And it's remarkable. And it really, really is beautiful. I reflected on a time not long ago where I thought, okay, I'll just walk around the city and I'll just talk to anyone who I can. And that was a really terrifying thing. And in the end, I didn't really have any great responses from anyone I talked to. But I met two or three people who live next door to us. And I just got to pray with them in the street. And it was a really beautiful time. But I still walked away feeling really disappointed that nothing happened. And then I was kind of stupid. And then stupid that I felt so disappointed, I suppose. And then and I didn't even make the connection, but one of the people we prayed with a few weeks later ended up coming to our little church and just sat there and wept the whole time. And it was just beautiful. And I'd never made the connection. I thought, wow, actually God probably did connect that point with this point, and I never even saw it. Like half the time I don't even see the connection between what God's doing because of my mouth and what's happening. And so when we talk, then God does stuff and he builds our trust in him. And as we trust, then we're thrust out to talk. And that's, I'm seeing that in us. I'm actually seeing it. It's beautiful. I'm seeing Alice pray with someone at the hairdresser's. I'm seeing Kaz praying with people as well. Ant's praying with a guy that is sitting around, and mixed praying for a friend at big dinner. Like, stuff's happening. So let's just keep putting our trust in Jesus and watching what he does. And this is a journey for us to move towards a place where we are people of action and people of words, and it's all about trusting in Jesus. Yeah? All right. So, I suppose my summary is that the gospel is trustworthy because God is trustworthy. That he will deliver us, but it's often after the event. We don't have to be eloquent or extraordinary to open our mouths. That's not what this is about. We just have to look at him and know that he's asking us to give it a go, and that somehow the Holy Spirit is preparing a way in advance, and it's going to work out okay. So, look, we usually do this. We often do this. So I'd love you to stand up, and we'll just have a bit of silence just to do our own stuff with Jesus. If you want, feel free to put your hands open. This is a time between you and God. You know, again, I say that I try to give words that represent something, that a message that God's put on my heart, but it has to be the Holy Spirit who speaks to you. And so, Holy Spirit, Spirit of Jesus, we invite you here. We know that you're here amongst us, and we want to be faithful servants. We're like Moses, and we're fearful and afraid. We have our doubts. We have our wrestles and our barriers to speaking the gospel. But we also know that you have taken us on a journey many times. You've taught us how to hear your voice. You've taught us to pray. You've taught us to recapture our first love. And you're going to teach us how to share our faith and to see people come to faith and to be transformed because of the words and the actions that you've given us. So we ask, Holy Spirit, that you'll speak to each of us. Just give you a minute or two. Just speak to us, Jesus, about what you are wanting us to do or what you are speaking to us about as individuals. I'm going to play a clip from the end of the King's speech. Because at the end of the King's speech, he overcomes his challenges just like Moses, just like us. And he is called to stand up as King of England when England has declared war on Nazi Germany. And actually this speech is not a declaration of war, even though that's what it is. It's actually a way of him leading and encouraging and rallying his people to have faith in God and in the mission that they've been given to overcome evil. And I think it's a fantastic speech. He's overcome his own personal struggles by going to, I think it's Jeffrey Rush, and learning to speak and learning to be humble and learning to overcome his own fears and barriers, and because of that he can stand up and actually lead the world. It's a beautiful ending, and once it's finished, in your own time, come and share the bread and the wine and worship Jesus, and then we'll finish with a song. And look, if anyone, we always say this, if anyone has something particularly on their heart that they'd like prayer for, please come to the front after communion, and there are always people to pray Thank you again.
In this grave, our perhaps the most fateful
in our history,
I send to every household of my peoples,
both at home and overseas,
this message,
spoken with the same depth of feeling for each one of you, as if I were able to cross your threshold and speak to you
myself. For the second time in the lives of most of us, we are at war. Over and over again, we have tried to find a peaceful way out of the differences between ourselves and those who are now our enemies.
But it has been in vain.
We have been forced into a conflict.
For we are called to meet the challenge of a principle which, if it were to prevail, would be fatal to any civilized order in the world. Such a principle,
stripped of all disguise, is surely the mere primitive doctrine that might is right.
For the sake of all that we ourselves hold dear, it is unthinkable
that we should refuse to meet the challenge.
It is to this high purpose that I now call my people at home and my peoples across the seas, who will make our cause their own. I ask them
to stand calm and firm and united
in this time of trial. The task will be hard. There may be dark days ahead, and war can no longer be confined to the battlefield. But we can only do the right as we see the right, and reverently commit our cause to God. If one and all we keep resolutely faithful to it, then, with God's help, we shall prevail.